Welcome to Unpacking the Digital Shelf, where industry leaders share insights, strategies, and stories to help brands win in the ever-changing world of commerce.
Hey everyone, Peter Crosby here from the Digital Shelf Institute. It's not that many people who can say they've spent over a decade in e-commerce and over a quarter of a century at a global powerhouse like Unilever, but Oliver Bradley, now Digital Commerce Strategy and Operations Director at Neem, is one of them. And his obsession is making sure every digital shelf image works on every level, accessible to every consumer, telling a cohesive brand story, and inspiring the confidence to buy. Oliver joined Lauren Levack-Gilbert and me to lay out his best practices and data that has convinced some of the biggest brands in the world to change their imagery ways. Ollie, welcome to the podcast. We are so delighted to have you on.
Hey Peter, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me on.
You're now at Neem, but you were at Unilever for a very long time. And 10 years of that was leading the digital shelf at Unilever. And to have a decade in on the digital shelf says a little something about how early you got in on figuring all this thing out. So congratulations on you for surviving and thriving that. One of your main areas of focus and expertise is really on visual content. And so that's really where we wanted to focus today, because images are so important to success on the digital shelf. So why don't we start with, how have you seen visuals on the PDP and the importance of content itself change over your years of making it all work?
Yeah, so great question. And thank you for inviting me onto your podcast. I've been doing digital shelf, as you say, for a very long time. And I think back to 2014 when Amazon launched their first Alexa voice search. And there was a lot of consternation and noise and probably a similar amount of noise we're going through now on agentic AI search and And many people, including my boss at the time, thought that visuals would be redundant in digital commerce. And I think on reflection, because we can look back with clear 2020 vision, visuals are actually more important than ever, especially with GEO and AI agents that can read text on images. And what's I, you know, we've seen is shopping using voice without a screen turned out to just be way too clumsy and slow. And here's the thing, just because of the way our brains are wired, we are able to absorb information from images really quickly. Our brains instantly recognize brands by color and shape. We love shortcuts. We avoid the cognitive load of reading text when shopping. We prefer to scan visuals. And, beauty brands are built on beautiful aesthetic visuals. And so the predicted disruption to commerce by voice never really happened. And this is actually really logical because from the shopper point of view, it wasn't quicker or easier than fast scrolling, looking through images. And it certainly wasn't more rewarding. Trying to talk to your chat, but it was difficult enough to order an Uber through your Alexa. I love to say to people, unseen is unsold, and the quality of your digital content visuals, both static and video, has become even more critical and competitive. And since Alexa launched, we've seen TikTok kind of take over the world and probably the most addictive algorithm, and we've seen video take over the internet. So if anything, the importance of visuals has only got stronger, Peter.
Well, the first thing I need to know is, have you called up that boss and told them, "Hi, I told you so"? Or did you use Alexa?
No, I think, I super respect that boss, and it's okay for him to be wrong about one or two things, because
He was
listen,
right about a lot.
he made a bet on me and looked after me, so
Well, and
I'm
look
not
how that turned out. So
gonna.
I praise him. I praise him. That's awesome.
So Ollie, we've seen kind of the, I'm going to call them trends around type of images on the PDP, what your competitors are doing in this space, what people like, what people don't like, what kind of pops. And I think one of the things that has stuck around is really the Cambridge image, even the mobile ready hero image. So, can you tell us a little bit about kind of where that came from, why they're so impactful, and really kind of the science behind the visuals there?
Yeah, hey Lauren. Great to chat to you
Hey,
on this
Ollie.
call as well. So I think, listen, when I joined the kind of e-commerce cohort back in 2013, I realized as Unilever we were well behind P&G, and one of the things I decided to do is kind of lock myself away, and over a couple of summers, and I track hundreds of shoppers, literally, initially on desktop and then on mobile. And I very quickly learned that they don't fixate or read product titles. They exclusively focus on scanning images for the information they needed. And one of the things that became so apparent was the mistakes shoppers made in terms of choosing size or count, trying to look at a tiny square thumbnail image versus a product in store, because you've obviously got the size relativity in store where you can see how big something is, and you just can't work that out on a screen. And I know Amazon try to address this as you scroll through the secondary images. They usually put a product on somebody's hand to show how big it is, but people want to try and work out size from the primary thumbnail image. And the majority of people, if you ask them, they'll recount, "Hey man, have you ordered the wrong size of something online?" They'll embarrassingly say to you, "Yeah, I have."
How many times I've ordered thinking it was one and it was 15? Yes.
I'm not going to ask what those were.
It relates a lot to like dog stuff. That I would say that category is the
You
hardest.
got a huge dog?
Yes, you
How
do.
many dogs have you got? So I realized. So I was actually really naughty. So what I started doing is adding these really ugly yellow lozenges, and just sending images to brand bank myself. Like no design, it was horrendous. But then I thought, no, this is going to end badly. So I went to JKR, which is a really big design agency, and Silas Amos worked with me on creating some decent first version of mobile ready hero images. So I drove myself up to Cambridge University because it's close to London, and I met with Dr. Sam Waller. And then obviously I had a design partner in Silas Amos. And one of the things I wanted to do is figure out with Cambridge University, how do we communicate the four most important things of brand, format, variant, size? And could we be brave enough to declutter the pack and just take off everything else? And was there a science behind this being able to sell more? So I was really fortunate actually, because the CEO of Unilever UK at the time was ex-Cambridge University. And I remember doing a presentation showing that I'd managed to get the Dove Bar hero image to 84% inclusion, or 16% exclusion. And which basically meant that the majority of UK adults could work out brand format, variant, size. And that, I said, would lead to higher sales, and we just needed to prove it doing A/B tests. And then I think one of the things I then did was just jump on planes and go and talk to retailers to sell in the new mobile ready hero images, particularly the Square Dove one, and say to them, "If you don't believe me, test it yourself." And we did over eight separate A/B tests with Walmart, with Amazon, with Ocado, with Sainsbury's, and even with your team in France. It was Alchemix at the time, but it was Magnum that got 24% uplift with a French retailer measured by Alchemix. And then I realized I was getting a lot of feedback from retailers saying, "Well, Unilever's got an unfair advantage. This is working great for you, but what are you doing for category growth?" And I had to be super brave. I had to then go to the senior leadership in Unilever. And I mean super senior leadership, and say, "We need to give this away. We can be first, but we can't be unique. We need to just say we should make it an industry standard." So I decided to do that via GS1. And we had 31 suppliers and 11 retailers, and we made the intellectual property open to all via the Cambridge University website to benefit the whole industry. And I felt good about that because accessibility should be for everyone. And yes, we still had first mover advantage. So that's in short a quick story of what happened. And I think in my last year at Unilever 2024, it's exactly a year ago I left, we worked on a one pager explaining what a mobile ready hero image is. Because although we created 50 pages of guidelines, I should actually take my own advice. I mean, Peter's
A
laughing at
picture's
me.
worth a thousand words.
Exactly. No, the guidelines did have pictures, Peter, but you know
Okay.
that too long didn't read thing. I should have, and so to create a one page was good. So we did that in July last year, and I'm talking at GS1 this month, and I'm talking about accessibility for screens. But I think just having a simplified one pager just saying, listen, it's not mobile ready if it doesn't pass the contrast test and the Cambridge Clarity test, really helps people, because otherwise people think, oh, we've done a good enough job. But as I say on LinkedIn, you just can't just eyeball stuff and assume it's good enough. You need a objective set of tests to determine that.
A amazing story.
I do go on a bit, sorry.
Well, I think the point of the podcast is that you go on a bit. So well done. And then secondly, the science behind it is so fascinating. And I think you were mentioning, I think your CEO, who it sounded like A, alma mater, B, wanted the science to be there to make such a decision. And I think that, and then I love giving it away. Like that's it really transformed an industry. And when you get something like a 24% uplift, that's an amazing number, and you're on to something. And I'm wondering how it has been to see that get adopted. And yeah, just sort of how it makes you think about the work that you do now. Like
Yeah,
what does
thanks,
that make you
Peter.
want to do, you know?
Yeah, listen, I think I'm it's been really an amazing thing to be able to work across industry now at Neem. So, we've set up a small boutique agency that makes some mobile ready hair images, unsurprisingly. We've also developed a piece of tech. It's a small plug, but it's an important one that has automated the two accessibility tests, and we've called it Rhino. And it's something that's I, you know, when you have an idea, but you think, I if I build this, it's going to benefit the whole industry. And that's so for me to move to a tech startup like Neem has been amazing, because I was able to build something that has always been on my heart to build. So, the algorithm for the APCA WCAG 3 contrasts is fairly straightforward, and anyone can grab it. But the algorithm for the Cambridge Clarity test isn't, and it's their IP, and it looks at obviously text size, and it looks at stroke weight or boldness. And it's been a privilege to work with Dr. Sam Waller again. And what we realized, or I realized, is when I ran content at Unilever, we were doing 250,000 images a year across 14 markets. I'm not exaggerating the numbers, they are real. And I have no doubts many big CPGs are doing hundreds of thousands of images across, platforms. And you guys know this. I can see Lauren nodding. And so to use an eyedropper is just laughable. You don't have the time. And the beauty is now with AI, you've got computer vision that can see text and numerals and rapidly run the contrast test, and then run, I guess, Cambridge Clarify text size and stroke weight test as well, and quickly give a result and say this text is sufficient contrast and this text is sufficiently big enough to be read on mobile. And do that at scale. So that's really exciting. And I'm pleased that we've been able to bring that to market quite quickly. I'm excited also because I'm seeing a lot more CPGs just lean in and ask me for help and want to do them properly because they realize, hey man, we haven't made the most of the mobile experience. And we're at this kind of crazy time in the industry where we've both got to get AI ready and mobile ready because we didn't really sort out the mobile ready thing, and we should have done because the iPhone was around in 2007, which is a bit embarrassing. We haven't sorted that out yet. But I think back because we didn't automate it and we didn't have AI computer vision. And now that we do, I guess we are without excuse, Peter. So
Yeah,
exciting
I
times.
was speaking of not having the excuse, is will the AI tools that are coming or the ones that exist already today that are going to create a lot of the images of the future, will they automatically be able to meet those standards? In other words, are we about to, in some ways, solve the problem through AI itself, that it will be fully compliant, or will we always need to sort of run it through a tester?
Yeah, so I think there's almost two questions in that question in a way. So I think AI, the way it's been used in Rhino is a testing tool. I think it's proven it works. When it's almost bulletproof in terms of I find it very hard to find fault with what we built so far, and I have a lot of CPGs actually testing it, which is amazing, and the feedback's been incredible. I think there's a dilemma in terms of when you daisy chain one AI to another. So let's say you have an AI that's trying to create an image and another AI that's testing an image, because ideally that's kind of what you want. You want this quality after the creation. Now, the problem with that in some ways is the AI that's doing the creation doesn't have access to Rhino because it's obviously a firewall and it's paid. You need to pay us. So, and also, listen, the AI also doesn't understand things like layered artwork and change management within an organization to say, oh, that brand color fails contrast. You need to go back to the senior vice president of that brand to get their color changed, because it's the wrong color purple, so you need to get super senior sign-off. And where I'm sitting, I think AI is amazing for creating backgrounds, textures, very simple stuff. In terms of being able to do proper hero images, can't do that yet. In terms of testing hero images, it's brilliant at it. I think also we're at a stage where designers are all using AI already. And they should be using AI definitely, like Rhino, to test, but they're using AI to generate ideas. But the reality is you still need really top designers to help you solve designing for 84 pixels, which is the space for that on Tesco.com. It is 10 millimeters, it's 84 pixels. And that is the most severe design constraints anyone's ever seen. That's really tough.
And the thing that, I actually have a graphic design background, and so this is always something that I love to talk about. But I think when you think about good design, there's also so many elements that match how consumers browse, right? Like you want more white space. A mobile ready hero image isn't crowded. There isn't a lot of text, right? So there's a lot of like basic design principles that I also encourage brands to think about when they're looking at images, because a lot of those principles apply when you're looking on a phone and you want to see something clearly and you want to see the size and you want it to be less crowded. So, kind of those basic design elements are also helpful for people to kind of get up to speed on what your eye looks towards, the kind of color, and things like that. So, I know you're going to talk about your checklist, but I think that's really important for people to kind of understand those basics, because it also applies in everything else that you're doing, like presentations and your D2C site and everything else. So there's a lot that goes
Everything on
across.
every yeah, it's amazing actually. And I always say less is more.
Yes,
And
always.
I think having the discipline to remove stuff and show restraint, it's hard. And I think everybody's trying to shout louder and louder, and sometimes actually standout is about doing less, because you really stand out if you're so single-minded. and so simple, you know. And I think, you know, Steve Jobs was so amazing at that in terms of designing for simplicity and being so single-minded. And that's why, you know, many Apple products are so amazing to use, is they, you know, they really thought and they've been very careful and not added too much stuff and too much clutter. You know, so I think, you know, in terms of what makes an image appealing and stuff, I think I'm fascinated by it as well because, you know, when I was at Unilever, we used Visit AI extensively. And, you know, visual attention is a big thing. There's other alternatives like Dragonfly. It's important to create aesthetically beautiful, beautifully designed images because they attract people's eyes. And, you know, there's common things like, you know, eye contact. You know, people naturally want to look at people's other eyes, you know, and all that kind of stuff really does matter. And I love to talk about radical incrementalism. It's trying to fix all the cumulative little small things so that your image, be it primary or secondary, is just that little bit better than your competitor. And all those little small wins add up.
So let's talk about those wins. Lauren mentioned your checklist. You've created a 16-point checklist for how to make content visually appealing and engaging to the consumer, which equals performance and sales for the brands. And obviously, we can't cover them all here, but I'd love for you to pick a couple that really stand out to you as a place to go as a taste, and then certainly we can send them to your website to get the full list.
Absolutely. So I think the first one, and this just seems ridiculously stupid, but always feature the product or brand as the hero. Okay. It's like,
Is that a problem?
duh.
Is
Sometimes that doesn't happen. So I'm like,
Oh,
okay, you want
fascinating.
to say, you know, the brand needs to be the hero. A nice one is naked. Product attracts positive attention. Like if you think about chocolate, you know, the reason Magnum got crazy good uplift and 24% uplift in their Magnum because we took the Magnum bar out of the pack, and we did the same with Ben and Jerry's. Before, no one else had said, "Oh, it's digital. You can take the lids off Ben and Jerry's packs and show what's inside. Nobody's going to stick their finger in." It's like, well, obviously, naked ice cream also looks amazing. Let's show off the texture. You know, but if you think your product's beautiful and it isn't, well then visit AI, you know, use attention test to just be sure, you know, not every product that's naked is beautiful. So I would caution brand managers
AKA
just
raw chicken, please do not put ch chicken cutlets as your primary image. That category to me is the worst. I don't want to see a chicken cutlet as your primary image. I was talking about this yesterday with someone, so it has come up several times.
That stuff's delicious, but it ain't pretty.
It's not pretty, but there's ways to make it look nice, but don't just put the raw chicken cutlet. Please, please.
I love that example. Yeah, because you know we've just done the pet food stuff, and there's a lot of raw chicken cutlets shown, and maybe it gets attention from the dogs and cats, but
Who don't have the credit
the
card, so. Was such
That's
a good one,
amazing.
Lauren.
Okay, so let's talk about design principles. So I mentioned these a bit, but like in your 16-point checklist, you have a lot of great ones. Hit us with like top three, top five in terms of
Sure.
making an image appealing as brands are working with
Yeah.
their internal agencies or external agencies.
You know, the one that I use always for the NCAPS PDP Awards, and Lauren, it's great to be a judge with you on that, is distinctive brand assets. So, you know, you should have a DBA. A distinctive brand asset, a logo or a recognizable color or shape big enough to pass the Cambridge Visual Clarity Test. You need this trust mark consistently across your images because otherwise, I mean, that image could belong to any brand. And actually, you want the shopper immediately to know that it's from you. So it's not enough to have attention. You need branding. And then lastly, obviously, you need to communicate whatever your call to action or benefit is, ABC. Now, attention, branding, communication. So, if you don't have branding and you don't have DBAs, you're done. So, that's one. Secondly, I would say the kind of less is more, the magic number is four. So, Maximize the image, minimize the copy, maximum 4 images per image. And I call this the cognitive load test. Probably when I did psychology at university, and you can tell I've been in Unilever 30 years. So
Well, you
just a
started
while
when you
ago.
were 12, so
You're so
you were a
kind. You're so
prodigy.
kind. So I have actually been back to Oxford University twice to get 2 qualifications since. But when I was at university, people used to think our brain could hold 5 plus or minus 2 things, 7 things. Actually, when I was at Unilever, we read through 48 recent academic studies in the last 10 years, and it says your cognitive load, or the maximum your working memory will hold, is four things. So either we've got more stupid since I was at university, there's a possibility with what the screens are doing to our brains.
Well, our attention span is less than a goldfish now, so
So there we
potentially.
go. So if people can only hold 4 things in their heads, then don't give them more than 4 things per image, and just give them 4 things. So temptation is to try and do five messages. Don't do four. Maximum 4 plus 1. You really are pushing it if you go to five. Don't go to 7 or 8. And then another one is like handwritten typeface. I know it looks fun and informal, but honestly, it's not easy to read. It's not that professional. That doesn't work. All the evidence that I have from Visit AI testing and from other testing in terms of legibility testing with Cambridge, handwritten typeface on images, don't do it. Another one, which I'll give you for free, is all caps. All caps is, if you write everything in caps, it is 20% slower to read. And I see brands make this mistake on supplementary images. And listen, I think caps is a designer's dream because everything is uniform. Height, it looks so neat. It seems to convey authority, although it is shouting at you. So I can see why designers love it. But the shoppers, well, the way you read is your brain can recognize an entire word in sentence case. So if you think of the word clarity with a capital C, your brain will see the capital C. It'll see the lowercase L going up. It'll see the cross through the T, and then it'll see the Y tail going down. And your brain will absolutely be able to read the whole word in one go. Now, if you write clarity in caps, your brain has to read it letter by letter. So, and try this. Give yourself 200 words to read all in caps, or 200 words, and time yourself, and I guarantee you'll be much faster reading it in sentence case. So I despair of how many brands think it's a great idea to write everything in caps. It seriously isn't. Use caps sparingly, people.
I feel like that last sentence was written in all caps.
And Ollie, the other thing I want to just hit on, you mentioned it a bit when you were talking about like distinctive brand assets and such, but color is really important in brand identity. And we talk about this a lot in the NCAP Awards. And I encourage people to check out the winners because Ollie and I have kind of helped in judging that. But if you, let's say, I think you were talking about like Cadbury eggs, like purple, like that, every image needs to have that purple, needs to use the same branding. But when we're looking at PDPs in the carousel that all have the same color, it looks like you're telling a story versus having this kind of like disjointed, like just product image, and then one's blue and then one's yellow and one's like pink or whatever it is. Making sure that you have your brand identity above and below the fold is also a really important one, and it helps the consumer really kind of flow through each of those images. Would you agree, Ali?
Absolutely. So, what color is Pepto-Bismol?
Pink.
Exactly. It's like it owns the color. And Pampers, everybody knows Pampers is that teal green. It just owns the color. And that's instant brand recognition right there. Then they've owned that color for years and years. Axe deodorant is black. Owning a color, Cadbury's purple. Harry's razors, it's got orange and blues. Harry's, they own the color, so I think owning a color is really powerful. Owning a shape or like a template is also really powerful too. So Obviously the McDonald's M is one of them, but Oakley kind of own that oval shape. When you think of see the Oakley oval, you're gonna go, yeah, those are Oakley glasses. They make pretty darn good sunglasses. I guess Adidas own a sort of triangular device thing. So shapes and color, it's just because your brain processes it so quickly, it almost allows somebody to recognize you from far away or really small on mobile instantly. And it's almost like an unfair advantage. So if you throw that unfair advantage away by not leveraging it, I'm like, what are you doing?
And put it in your brand guidelines. Like, I think anyone listening on the brand side, like, you will share a link to how to look at those kind of 16 points and how to think about it. But like, as you're building out your brand guidelines and you're briefing your agency, it's important to think about these elements because consistency has always been really important. I think consistency is even more important in an agentic world, right? Because it's scraping images, it's scraping text, it's scraping language, like, and it all needs to be uniform across all the different channels.
Exactly right. I mean, it's reading text on images, it's reading PDFs and reading reviews, so
And
if you're not joined
manuals,
up, if you're not joined up, you're going to get found out now.
for sure. And Ollie, before we close, I just wanted to ask you kind of more of an organizational or process question with all this. When you are collaborating with a team and you're in a on a on an e-commerce team, and there's a lot of fingers in that pot, when you're bringing this science or really trying to impose maybe too strong a word, but how's the collaboration go between creative and e-commerce and account managers? What does that sort of teamwork look like? Is there a lot of convincing that needs to happen, or do you find when you're able to present the science, it's like, oh, okay, well, we're going to do this? Is that what you lead with, or how does that work?
So I think, listen, we got to a good stage of organizational maturity with a really strong global center of excellence in Unilever. Certainly at the start, back in 2014, 2013, there's a lot of convincing and galvanizing and alignment, and it was really hard work, Peter. I think I one of the things that I kind of I've been really big on is to move conversations away from opinion and onto data. So the very first thing I did was to try and take anything and everything that I was learning from Cambridge University and A/B tested, anything that I was learning on from Visit AI, A/B tested, because listen, everyone's love language in big business is commercial. Talk to retailers, commercial. Show me the money. So, if you want to win arguments, bring the data and then bring the money and show this is size of prize. That would be my hot tip for anybody listening. If you only have science and you don't have the ROI or the money slide, unfortunately, some people might not come with you. Some people are not as geeky as Lauren and I and love psychology and design. And they might just go, well, that's their point of view. So I think you need to turn it into kind of into dollars, and then people will come with you, Peter.
That's great. Thank you. So, before I give the URL, I do want to know, where did the name Rhino come from for your fantastic tool?
So you can hear I'm South
Yes.
African. So Rhino is a really big African animal and it has terrible eyesight. And I was thinking, you can actually, and I've done this with my brother-in-law who's a game guide. So long as you are downwind of the rhino and the rhino can't smell you, he won't see you because he or she won't see you because they have such poor eyesight. You can really sneak up on them. And I thought, I need to convey it's a bulk test. And I need to also have a little sense of humor that it's a bit of an animal with poor eyesight. So that's the brand that we've created, Rhino from Neem. It's a bulk tester for images where you want to work out whether the text on images is legible.
Not only do you learn digital, but you learn animal facts on unpacking the digital
Welcome to the
shelf.
podcast. I'm just thinking, if you're going to take that chance with a rhino, you better hope the wind don't change.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I trust my brother-in-law. He's a good game guard.
Oh my gosh, I've been so fortunate to go on safari a couple of times. It's, another tip for our listeners. If you can, I know it's a privilege. If you can ever take a chance to do it, it's life-changing. It's wonderful. But the rhino
Absolutely.
we really need to talk about, Ollie, is the one you have on your site. So, if you want to take a look at this test and find out more about the checklist and certainly work with Rhino, it's at weareneem, weareneem.com/rhino, RHINO. So weareneem/rhino.
Brilliant.
Ollie, thank you so much for bringing all this wisdom and experience and humor to our podcast. We're super grateful.
Thanks for having me, Peter and Lauren. It's been fun.
Thanks again to Oliver for the wisdom and the data. All those things can be found anytime you're in the mood at digitalshelfinstitute.org. Become a member while you're there. Thanks for being part of our community.